Hi, welcome back to the Mob Mentality Show. My name is Austin Chadwick, and co-host is Chris Lucian. And today we got a great guest. We got Scott Showalter, and we got a nice and catchy topic to talk about today. So you've heard of mob programming, I'm sure, but have you ever done mob not programming? Before we jump into that topic, though, Scott, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so I've been an agilist. And I recently rediscovered my entry point into agile or agility, which was in 2008. I came across an artifact that made it very clear that I've been doing this for almost two decades now. So, and I've been in the software industry for a couple decades doing consulting here and there, and really just enjoy the process of helping people become their best versions of themselves. And you know, a year ago, I founded the Agile Career Accelerator, which is exciting because I've helped people become the agilist they want to be, whether it's finding their first role as a scrum master or even an agile coach, or just helping people get insane pay increases and doing that through the skills that are rare, that no one really teaches, which is, you know, hyper networking and infinite interviews, as I call them, and just really leveling up your influence in a way where it's not just going to get you your next job or your next pay increase. Like some people, including myself this year, 40% pay increases. It's astounding. But also the ability to influence a team in a way where they really begin to trust you and want to do what it is you want them to do, which is best when you're not telling them what to do, but it's coming from within, if that makes sense.
Oh, that's fantastic. And actually, those would be some good follow-up topics we can maybe hit later on in the show. So, first, let's jump into the mob not programming. So I'm guessing there's a story to this that led to, you wanting to do a topic about this. So what's the origin story here?
Yeah, so I was coaching a service team, primarily service, right? They're taking tickets. They do a little bit of programming here and there. This was a company I'm consulting with, a major, one of the top three automobile manufacturers, one that I know you know and love. And just really exciting to see them just eat up this idea of working together collaboratively through a process that wasn't really well loved, right? A lot of people in on a service team, it's kind of just, they're kind of there to pay the bills and they're really still finding their bearings as far as, becoming passionate about the work that they're doing and really believing there's a sense of purpose there and going all in, if that makes sense.
Nice. So I guess for me, so what was the nature of the work? If it wasn't writing code, what's like an example thing that was worked on in a mob type style?
Yeah, so on a service team, they're taking tickets, right? There's problems that need to be solved. And sometimes when you're working in that type of environment where it's like fire after fire or, just challenges that you're going into it blind and you have no idea what it is that even needs to be done to resolve the issue, it can be so daunting that there's a real lack of any meaningful motivation to get after it and go do the work. And that's really where the transformation happened. When we experimented with this and tried it as a team, the discovery was, hey, this isn't so bad when we're working together. Because if you think about humans and human nature, we're social creatures. We're not meant to work alone in silos. And some of us have convinced ourselves that we do really well when we're alone and working on our own. But ultimately, when it comes down to it, one plus one is not two, right? When there's more of us, it becomes a multiplier. of what we can accomplish, right?
Yeah, when so when one of these tickets came in, you know, there must have been shifts in the dynamic. You know, how did behaviors shift when people were in a group versus alone when handling requests or tickets or just anything along those lines?
So one thing I can say is this all happened before the pandemic. It was probably in the year leading up to the pandemic. So it's been a while. It would be interesting to maybe talk later about how this might shift in a remote world where there's real issues like Zoom fatigue and things like that. But in a live team environment, which, you know, it's only a matter of time before we all go back to that, at least in part. Like, I know there's already talks of like a hybrid model, right? But in the full team model, basically before, what you would see is everyone's working individually, but some patterns, because like I'm a person that notices patterns, right? And the pattern I was noticing was, you know, before the collaborative approach, I would walk into the team, because I was coaching multiple teams at the time. Whenever I'd walk into the team, I would notice like two or three people out of their seats missing, like they were out going for a walk and getting coffee and things like that. And all things that are super important when you have to like constantly live together, right? But especially important when you have to work alone, because the way our subconscious mind works is it chews on a problem when you're not thinking about it, right? That's why you can kind of, and I forget who does this, but one of the big, you know, famous people out there, very successful, just can't remember their name, unfortunately, came up with this idea of like, give yourself a problem before you go to bed, and then you'll wake up and you'll have solved this problem. It kind of works the same way with you know, taking small breaks throughout the day, but that's especially important if you're having to work on something by yourself. You need to give yourself that space. The nice thing about when you come together, it tightens the space up. You don't need as much of that space because you're engaging natural parts of the human dynamic, the human behavior, the human mind that thrives in connection with others, you know? So, you know, this idea of like brainstorming or spitballing, whatever word you want to use, like tossing ideas back and forth and having real meaningful discussions can be incredibly helpful, right? And then there's, in the context we were trying it, there was always a driver, and then everyone else was like, you had your main navigator and then the backseat drivers, as I call them, where everyone's given their input, right? Because we're flying blind. It's kind of like a video game. You ever played a video game and the map is completely black?
Yeah.
But as you go to areas of the map, it just starts lighting up those sections, and then you begin to understand things as you
explore. Fog of war.
So it's kind of like that, right? Like, but, you know, as one person, you can only explore so much of the map at one time. It's kind of slow. Together, everyone can kind of set out, even if only mentally, and they're exploring different parts of the map and lighting them up and bringing what they've learned and what they've discovered back to the group discussion. But, you know, of course, without anyone leaving, because they're in the ensemble, the mob, the whole time.
Yeah,
just we gathered around the table, that sort of thing, and yeah, just kind of work through each problem like solving a puzzle.
I mean, that's really valuable when, you know, especially if somebody's alone, like you said, they're constantly having to chew on the problem, and it's likely that solution, you know, with a few seconds of brainstorming can be solved, where an individual might have taken much longer, just because it takes them a while to exhaust, you know, and some people kind of do a depth first search and some people do a breadth first search, and the combination of that can also lend itself, and exploring those areas becomes easier too. So if you all go down the same path at the same time, you can compare notes as you go too. So yeah, that compounding effect is very real.
Yeah, and one so you said these were support requests. So is this like troubleshooting a customer issue or something like that?
Troubleshooting, it was a server side support team. So it was internally focused, like the customer was internal.
Okay.
But because customer is always a cascade, right? Even if it's internal, there's still the external customer, and there may be multiple levels of customers as you cascade down the customer ladder, as I like to call it.
Yeah.
But yeah, mostly internal. So yeah, you know, trying to figure out what's going on with any of the servers, and, you know, just using their knowledge and in this environment, kind of like programming, like everything's a little bit different. I'm a big fan of agile games, and I'm also a critic of agile games, and I see a lot of them that are simple, that are like flow based, where it's like you're delivering value, but it's multiple units of the same amount of value. And that's just not how programming works. It's a little bit different every time. We're solving different challenges. Same with server side support, or really any support. Most times is going to be different things each time.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do have some experiences on that kind of the support side where we mobbed it. And I really loved your analogy with the map, like the game map, you know, because especially when you're troubleshooting or helping someone, experience is huge, right? And it's also what you said, Chris, we're different styles of troubleshooting or research, but also experience, right? So I remember there'd be some, you know, issue, and we'd be as a mob be troubleshooting it. So we're like on the person's computer, you know, and some person will start diving into this file to figure out if the problem's there in their configuration. And I remember there's been so many times where we're doing that, where we start on a path that almost like is turning into this huge mountain, like to figure out the problem. And then all it takes is someone to be like, oh, and they have some insight from a previous experience on helping a customer, that they take us in a completely different direction, but then we solve it. But I just imagine how long you'd be climbing that mountain alone. but since everybody has different parts of the map, they're able to bring that together. And it's really fun to see. And it also, it gives a good, you know, I know with user experience, it's good to interact with your customers. And I think those calls have been a great opportunity to really feel the personas of the people you're helping. And so I think I've really enjoyed that. And I guess one follow-up question I have is, after seeing it work in kind of this support team, this ticket support team, maybe this is a bit of speculation, but where else could you see mob, not programming, work for non-code type things? Is there anywhere that you kind of see like, oh, this is a roughly equivalent area that could probably see the same benefits? Yeah,
I've seen it work really well in you know, like design thinking. Design thinking pretty much almost leverages the idea of a hive mind, right? We need all of us to think through what all the possibilities are, because if you think about it, a small team or if there's a team which has as little as a single designer on it, that designer is limited in how fast they can go in their discovery and exploration process. And when we have all of us, you know, I've even done sessions where I've brought engineers to the table to help us think through some design work. And it almost works the same way. Together as a whole, like we are all thinking based on our different perspectives, experiences, and cultures, we're all just naturally going to come up with different ideas. But then when we combine those into a pile, say we're sketching out UI ideas. Wow, that was a mouthful. Someone's going to think of something that someone else might have missed, but that person might have thought of other stuff. So like when we work together, we're not missing as much. We're thinking through all of the edge cases, and then when you, it's a series of diverging and converging. Yeah, we're gonna spend like 5 minutes thinking alone in like a micro silo, even though we're all at the same table, thinking alone about what it is we think might solve this challenge. We bring all of our ideas together and we look at them, we talk about them. That's converging. And then we diverge again. We go back to the drawing board, rethink of new possibilities, because now we're informed by the solutions that were just discussed, right? I just saw everyone else's ideas. I'm informed by that. I know more now, and I can go back and create something else. And then we converge again. And it's that has worked really well for major companies as well as small ones to really figure out how to solve any challenge in a way that's going to extract the most amount of value, because we're looking at every possibility.
Nice. Yeah. And I recently went through that quite a bit, where we were designing not only user interface, but designing a system. And we kept the mobbing style going, even though we were basically just working on a whiteboard, a remote whiteboard. But it really, and actually we kind of just did that this morning from a security perspective. So the same whiteboard, but from a security perspective. And so, and how will everyone brings to the table their own paranoia or lack of paranoia about security, whatever you're dealing with. And then we can hash it out and then add it into our kind of collective mindset on the whiteboard. I really like that experience. And so I think, yeah, those same benefits apply whether you're putting code together or putting a design or putting a drawing together. And I think maybe one more question before we transition is, I suspect the challenges or objections and all that kind of stuff that normally comes when someone suggests a mob programming experiment happened when it was with non-code, or how was that experience, I guess, for you?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. like you were talking about overcoming mountains, we had to overcome the mountain of getting everyone interested in possibly doing it, because it seemed scary at the time. You know, I think back to what does the word mob even mean? Well, a mob means an incited crowd, right? What better thing to get incited about than working together, right? Mobbing to me is a means of accomplishing higher quality work with higher camaraderie on the team. What more could a team ask for, you know? But going into it, they don't always know that. So of course there were fears with, you know, working together as a team. And so I had to, you know, bring out my normal coaching cards, you know, ask big questions. It's like, what are the biggest fears and the concerns that you have about doing this? I actually was trying to get out of them what the most extreme scenarios could be, so that when they actually experienced it, it felt so different than what they were fearing it could be. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it reminds me of the accusation audit in I'm gonna botch the title of this book, but it's like Never Split the Difference. I think it was a book about communication and negotiation, but it was basically like
boss, yeah, negotiating.
Address all the worst case scenarios up front, and so when they go into it, they that's the comparison, and they already have kind of, they're already prepared for the worst. So when they deal with the normal, it won't, you know, feel so bad. Yeah.
And so some of the questions, you know, in addition to the fears and concerns, I asked them like, also like, how much of your time is spent thinking versus fingers on keyboards doing the work? And it was 80% thinking, 20% doing the work. So at that point, they begin to see the value of thinking together, because the majority of their work is thinking. It wasn't that they were just going to sit around a table and watch someone else do some typing and clicking and searching.
The drivers, right? And the watchers.
The drivers and the Uber passengers.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then I guess the final kind of straw was showing them Llewellyn Falco's chart, revealing that quality is top notch when we have the best of everyone together. Have you seen that chart?
Mm-hmm.
And so that sealed the deal and quelled their fears and softened their hearts and opened their minds to trying it. And they liked it. They liked it a lot. They felt like there was definite value doing awesome. The work together.
Yeah, and I think the first time I had started mobbing, for going from a non-mobbing situation, you know, we didn't exactly measure our throughput, so to speak, against what we were doing now versus before, but like everybody kind of had a consensus of like, this feels faster because we are just turning through them, like beginning to end, closing the loop, cranking through items like that.
Yeah, I think our first ticket was resolved in 20 minutes, and someone said this would have taken us an hour.
Yeah, yeah.
And the thing of it is, even though there were four people doing that, like, it increased team morale too.
Yeah.
Right, so there was added advantages beyond just time, and we have to be able to look at that.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Yeah, and I think cycle time is usually an easy win. Throughput's always a tougher, you know, thing to, maybe that requires measurement to see, but yeah, cycle time is like everyone's intuitive experience is always like, oh my gosh, whoa, you know. Yeah, right on. And maybe this is a good time to transition topics, because you were talking to, you mentioned before about, facilitating team trust and growing trust. Yeah, what's kind of your tool bag for coaching and helping, you know, teams trust each other, trust you, you know, what's your thoughts there?
Yeah, you're right. Welcome to the weekend workshop. We'll spend 20 hours going through every tool in my tool bag. Hope you've brought your snacks, some water.
Oh, man, okay. That's
right. Some coffee.
Oh, maybe that's... some top recommendations or something.
Yeah. Well, as far as mobbing goes, right? You know, it's always good to have the typical structure. Who's going to be the machine donor? In person, it was, you know, using the information radiator that the team had, and just switching that to the computer they had running, and then like everyone could see it. Someone donated the keyboard, someone donated the mouse, things like that. And a structure of defining like who's gonna be that first driver. And what we did is we started with the most knowledgeable driver, the most knowledgeable person as the driver for the first 5 minutes, and then they switched to navigator while someone else stepped in and drove. Always got to have a timer, right? But how do we make the timer fun? Well, I use the Stranger Things theme song as the non-annoying alert tone, because alert tones can get super annoying when you're mobbing, because it's just going over and over and over. So they enjoyed that. I played a lot of Agile games with this team. So that built a lot of trust, because there was hesitancy of like, what, you're going to make us play a game, you know, the first time. One of my favorite games is a deep sea diving game. It's called Deep Sea Adventure, where it's a collaboration game in disguise, because everyone thinks it's everyone for themselves until they realize they're all sharing one oxygen tank. And the deeper they dive, the more the treasure's worth, but also the more oxygen they lose. And everyone is losing oxygen when one person loses oxygen. So pretty much the first round, everyone dies. And it's absolutely hilarious when it happens. And that builds a lot of not just trust and not just realization of like, hey, we can have fun together as a team, but hey, Scott's actually kind of cool. Because I, you know, not a lot of coaches bring games to their teams. And in this game particularly, they realize the value of like breaking down their work and working through smaller increments and, you know, limiting their work and process, right? If you have two heavy pieces of treasure, you're losing twice as much oxygen. So that one's always cool. We did some other games, things like that. We did some improv just together as a group with the team, and you know, things like that build a lot of trust. There's also a game that I like to play. It's called Best Team Ever. And I like to play this when I'm new coaching a brand new team, because it helps us recenter ourselves on what's important to all of us by asking each member of the team what's important to them. Because the question that the game is centered around is, what were the attributes of the best team you were ever on? So everyone's putting their sticky notes out with all those attributes, one per sticky, of course, hard, fast rule. And then everyone gets to vote. They're allowed to vote as many of the stickies as they want, but they can only move it up the ladder once. So you start to see these stickies moving up the ladder. And then in the end, we kind of have the attributes of what we want to be as a team in a way where we did it. It was fun and very revealing. And so I like to pull that one out first because it really builds a lot of trust with the person who's a coach who, you know, a coach shows up on a team and the team's like, we don't need a coach. Who sent you? Like, everything's great here. We're doing well. Like, why do we need you? And then they begin to see that you're the real deal, that you really care about them, and that over time they begin to realize, oh, there is a next level. You know, it's interesting because I recently learned that even Oprah has a coach. And I'm like, what? She's making, I think, what, billions now? And she has a coach? Why would she need a coach? Well, it's because she realizes even someone as successful as her knows that there's another level.
Mm-hmm.
So I do a lot of storytelling as well, if you couldn't already tell.
Yeah. Great.
It's like the more you know, the more you don't. The more you know, the more you know you don't know, right? And the more you know you need coaching, right? But go ahead, Chris. Sorry.
No, I was going to say I really like the idea of the best team ever thing. I hadn't heard that before. And I can see that, you know, when a team has this, the idea of working agreements kind of introduced, I hear often or have witnessed this in the past where working agreements are like, oh, we're going to, you know, cage ourselves with a set of rules or something along those lines, right? Like and so if anything, that kind of establishes some like positive working agreements almost.
Yeah, well, and you realize, oh, there's a reason that we're setting these boundaries in some cases. They're enabling constraints, right? Mm-hmm. They're meant to serve us so that we can be this better version of ourselves that we might not be able to be. We all agree we want to be, but might not be able to be without us all being aligned on where the boundaries do need to be and what are the areas that we do need to improve and how we are intentional about incorporating that, you know, learning time and that intentional, deliberate practice into our day and our week or our sprint, right? Because how are we ever going to level up if we aren't constantly seeking to improve and believing that we can be more than what we are now?
Yeah,
right on. Yeah, and actually, next time I facilitate for my team, I'm going to try it. So you've already inspired me. Cool. Yeah, maybe we can do one more topic before we run out of time here, which is, it sounds like you have a passion for growing agilists. Yeah, maybe you can share more about that, and maybe it goes right along with that coaching coaches, right? You know, how does that look?
Coaches. Yep.
Yeah. How does that look for you? And what have you seen the impact be from doing that kind of thing?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think about the people who've coached me, and there's so many, right? There's a lot of names. One of my first coaches was April Jefferson. If you don't know her, you should. She's a wonderful, beautiful woman in the Black Agile community who is just so uplifting of other people and building up other coaches and aspiring coaches. And she was the first one that inspired me because, you know, several years ago, I asked myself, do I even have what it takes to become a coach? I knew it was something that I possibly wanted to do. And, you know, she saw me in a, it was kind of like a simulated coaching environment, but she looked at me and she said, Scott, you should become a coach. You would be great at this. And I think about other people that are stuck in their careers. They're kind of orbiting this massive planet, right? You need some other massive body to slingshot you out of that orbit and into a new one. She was one of the first people that did that. And then just over the years, other people like Cheesy, Lisa Adkins, people like that, just surrounding myself with people who I wanted to become like, because you do become like others that you hang around. So I had to stop hanging around the people that I didn't want to be like anymore and surround myself with the people that I did want to become.
Yep.
And that's not to say that you're going to become those people, because you're going to be your unique you. It's, you know, the best basketball players in the world weren't trying to become the next Michael Jordan. They were trying to become the first Kobe Bryant, the first, you know, LeBron James, things like that. So, you know, think about who you are, who you want to become, and surround yourself with people who are crushing it. And it was ultimately when I realized I was sitting on some gold. I was sitting on a resume format unlike anything anyone had ever seen that helped me land a coaching role with no prior experience and no certifications. And just over the past couple of years, realizing I was getting job offers for every single job I was interviewing for because I had a particular set of skills, like Liam Neeson. And I knew other people needed this because there are people out there that are stuck and could be earning so much more. And it's not necessarily that it's about the money, but being content where you're at when you can earn, for example, 40% more, it can actually be a disservice because it's limiting your ability to reinvest in yourself so that you can reinvest in others, improve your skills, improve your ability to be more influential, so that you can go and be more powerful and more impactful in the teams that you are coaching or serving as a scrum master for, or product owner, product manager, even like designer or engineer, right? When we invest in ourselves, we're planting trees that are gonna, you know, bear fruit for so many others in the future. But we need income to do that. So,
yeah, I really like what you said about being with people you want to be like, right? Basically, because and I think there's something ancient and classic about that kind of mentorship, where just by the act of being around them, you really pick up a lot of things that are hard to teach, so to speak, that you could hear in a talk or watch in a video or something like that. And that's kind of, I think, one of the reasons why mobbing is so fantastic in that regard is, and I think in looking back at my own career, I saw big jumps when I was able to be with the people who were, you know, doing things a certain way, as opposed to just listening to them. And so, yeah, so I think whether through networking or working with them or whatever, you know, I guess what would be your, if someone's kind of in that spot where they're like, you know, I know of people, or, you know, what would be the next step to kind of bridge the gap to like, being within proximity enough to learn to be like them, basically?
If I interpreted your question correctly, if you are out there and you are trying this, you are trying to either land your first agile role, which kudos to you, it's not easy. It's simple with the right tactics, but it's not easy, especially because everyone wants like 5 to 10 years of experience. It's a chicken and an egg. How do I land a role if I don't have the experience, but I can't get the experience because no one's bringing me on, giving me the experience, right? To those people, I say the very first thing you need to do, stop applying to jobs, because job boards, you're only seeing 20% of the opportunities there. And stop talking to recruiters, because they don't know how to sell people that have no experience, right? So you have to put yourself in front of as many people as possible. Meetups is one way to do that, but meetups is really slow. So, but you got to put yourself out there, right? For people that are stuck in their career, or maybe they've convinced themselves that they're happy with where they're at, that might be cool and all. I also know that this is a struggle out there, is people perceive the option of, you know, leaving your organization to find something better as allowing your team to fail. But here's the thing with that. Sometimes they just need someone else to be better. And that's nothing against us. It's just that every team's a little bit different. And after you've been there for a while, sometimes a change of pace is actually what they need to break the, you know, break through and succeed. So it's not selfish. It's not abandonment to decide to leave. The nice thing is with the strategies we teach in the Agile Career Accelerator, you don't necessarily have to leave. That's a nice thing. Like, I got a 40% pay increase. I know others who've done the same and they didn't ever have to leave their organization. They just knew the skills that, for example, Chris Voss doesn't really teach in the book Never Split the Difference. Mm-hmm. These are things that have gotten me and dozens of other agilists where they're at. I know a scrum master who just got a $45,000 pay increase using some of these strategies. So they work, right? It is work. It's a little bit of work. It's like an hour a day, maybe two, depending on how fast you want to go. But it's all centered around, you know, putting yourself out there and being who you want to become and being authentic.
All right. Well,
if you never do that, you're never going to get further than where you're at.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think we're coming up on time. And so I just wanted to ask Scott, is there anything that you want to share or plug before we wrap it up?
Well, you can always find me on LinkedIn if you type in Scott Rageous, Scott Rageous in the search box. That should bring me up. Or you could just type Scott Showalter, although I know there are a few of us running around. So if you're having trouble finding me, you can just go to agilecareeraccelerator.com. Everything's on there, all the masterclasses that we teach. We've got some training. I do a coaching with agility certification through IC Agile about once a month. So there's information on that in there. And yeah, check out our YouTube channel. Just search YouTube for Agile Career Accelerator. And I guess we need apparently 100 subscribers to make it official. So consider subscribing, because we're going to be dropping a lot of little knowledge bombs on there to help people advance their careers. So I'm really excited that we've just launched that and eager to see where it goes from here.
All right. Thank you, Scott. And to our audience, anybody who is, please like and subscribe. And for anyone who knows somebody who might be, you know, stuck a little bit, or maybe they might have an opportunity to mob on something that's not programming, then consider sharing this episode with them. I think sharing the episodes really helps. So to everyone, have a good one. Thanks, Scott, for being on with us, and we'll see y'all later. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.